The following program is intended for mature audiences.
You're listening to Bottom Shelf Recording Talk.
Sounds boring.
Oh my, yeah.
With your hosts, James Seabrook.
Okay, you were paying attention, but the idea is clear in my head, but translating it into English is not. That's brutal. I understand the hypocrisy.
And Joey Roach.
I don't even know what you do. I was just told you were the man. Some people would say I'm overconfident. That could be my ego talking, though.
I'm trying to think of the right word.
Oh.
Yeah.
Must be a tough word. Next subject.
You're bored with this one?
You don't hear us gassing on about it.
I keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories,
you have a big mouth.
Here's a good idea.
What are you even talking about?
Have a point.
Why are you airing personal matters with complete strangers?
It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Yeah, because if it turns out absolutely terrible, then it's 100% my fault because I've changed things.
All right. Well, are these different mics from the ones that we used last time?
No, they're the same ones, I think.
Okay. So we're going to get...
We've been using the same mics, the same preamps, the same processing in the computer. But now what we're doing is...
you're just going in hotter than usual.
Yeah, that. But also I'm doing a digital boost pre-record.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went into the software and I boosted the gain of the, and I'm going to have to remember to turn them down, I think, because it might fuck up the next recording.
All right.
So I may never do this again, but.
Okay.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. So if something sounds funky and amiss, then it's all my fault.
Well, I'm more commenting on, like, do you think we're going to get a random dropout that we'll have to boost by, like, 48 dB?
That didn't sound so bad.
No, it was, but you could tell what part it was because got noisy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Had that same thing happen on the live broadcast Sunday night.
Really?
Yeah. For those of you listening on G Radio, you'll hear following this show. Because it rebroadcast on Tuesday nights. The microphone, again, we're using the 421s for all the vocal mics with all the bands now, as well as their interview portions.
Right.
And the drummer is talking and he just goes whisper quiet. And that's exactly what happened is the one of the 421s, I guess, is intermittent.
Right.
And... so it's now been labeled. We may test it more to find out why, but yeah, it's now been labeled and I had to go in this morning as I was processing the live broadcast to send to the radio station to fix it.
Right.
And I did the same thing. I just
boosted it by a ridiculous amount.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course,
minimize as much of the sound as possible.
You can hear the guy talking.
Yep.
Then you can hear the other guy talking, and he's all like mega distorted because he's just smashing into the limiter.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like 15 seconds from the point he started talking after we'd noticed it, and then we got it fixed, but. Our solution was just to swap mics.
All right.
Yeah, but there's 15 seconds of just trashy, awful-sounding audio.
At least you got it sooner than you did last time that it happened.
Yeah, yeah. We had a nice tug of war with one of the radio hosts. We were expecting a different mic to have problems, and so we yeah we
oh so you were. Watching for problems and
yeah, we were already watching for problems
and a different problem arised
and this mic, which we didn't expect, cut out. And but the tug of war was we intentionally left the inside because we're doing this all in Charlie Brown room, right we intentionally left the inside door open and not latched, but the outside door just snug but also not latched. So that it, you know, I mean, we wouldn't have any noise. I mean, it's a quiet evening anyway. Specifically, so that if we had to sneak in and do something, we wouldn't have
you wouldn't get that click,
the loud click, right? And so, every time that we did that, the one guy, Michael James, cool guy, but would sneak over, close the door, and then give us a dirty look through the window. And of course, so we'd have to sneak in and
get that click,
get, you know, fix something, and then we'd get that click. Valerie, one of the students, is helping out a lot on the show, and she was able to successfully time the click, the time that she went in, because we did this, we must have snuck in four times,
right?
And he must have closed it on us four times. Anyway, so she managed to sneak in and have the click line up perfectly with one of the hand drums. You don't really notice it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just enhance
the
snappiness of the hand drum.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway. I have something I want to talk about in relation that was inspired by the radio show on the weekend.
Okay.
But I want to hear about this.
My Idiocracy?
Your Idiocracy. Fantastic movie, by the way.
It's been so long since I've seen it.
Really?
Yeah, I need to find it and watch it again. Especially since everybody's saying we're currently there or on our way to Idiocracy. I don't know if they're right, but...
You know what? Based on some trends I've seen, I think we're on our way for a divide where half the population is that and the other half of the population is not.
Hmm. I don't know. We'll see.
I can see it. Anyway, so what did you get yourself into?
So, yesterday would have been Monday night. I agreed to write a 30-second song, or all that's needed is 25 seconds. So I'm thinking I can write at least a minute. There should be plenty for whomever to do their thing. They want to, or they have a project where they have to animate to music, but it can't have lyrics, because I guess that'll encourage what they animate or whatever. And I was asked if I could write a piece for that. I said sure, and then I was informed that it had to be done by Wednesday.
So you have a busy day ahead of yourself.
Today, yeah. I have to go to White Hove, and then I'm going to buy some food to last me till Friday. And then I'm also going to stop by the Long McQuaid near there and see if I can get a USB cable and some MIDI cables. I need those. I'm going to do this today. Or I think I need those. I don't know. I'm going to use my new keyboard, and I might need all those cables.
Yes. So for the sake of Chris from the Gravy Age, because he had that lovely intervention, that lovely keyboard intervention with us a while ago.
Yeah, but this isn't a synthesizer. This is a keyboard. It's a stage keyboard.
It's a stage keyboard.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's got like pianos, organs. I think there's only two synth patches, and I don't get to manipulate them at all.
Oh, all right.
Although they sound very 80s.
That's okay. That's part of what you love about it.
Oh, that's why I love synths, is just how goddamn cheesy they can be. Especially the new System 8. That's the one I think I will buy, but because I bought the Korg SV1 just recently, I'm holding off on the System 8.
That's fair.
Yeah. And I mean, the whole thing about the System 8 is you essentially get three keyboards all built into one.
Right.
And that's more or less what attracts me to that, because you get a Juno, you get the new sound module, and then there's another module I can't remember, something that Roland makes that's super popular.
Sure.
And then you get the option, I think, of one additional module, which Roland's been making. So you could buy it and then import it into the keyboard. And then essentially you got then four keyboards built into this one.
Sweet.
Yeah. That's what's attracting me to that. But I'm holding off on the purchase of that because I just bought an SV1 for $850.
I can totally see you turning into Geddy Lee.
Geddy Lee?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because you're now playing bass more than you're playing guitar.
Yep.
And now you're getting into keys.
Yep.
Yeah. That sounds like Geddy Lee.
Okay.
You don't think so?
I'm sure he's more successful at the music part than I am.
Notwithstanding.
But yeah, today's going to be get those cables from Long McQuaid, race over home, and just write, which should be fun.
What style do you have to write in? Does it have to be in a specific style?
No. It's been suggested to me that I write something interesting, maybe possibly proggy.
Something interesting. That's good. That's a good place to start.
Yeah. Well, Bjork was mentioned.
Okay.
Like they were thinking of taking a Bjork song, I guess.
Right.
So something out there is what it has to be.
Cool. All right.
Oh. 30 seconds to a minute, though. That sounds doable. In a day.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, there's no reason why you couldn't.
No.
The only reason why you wouldn't is because of you.
No.
Get in your own head.
Yeah.
Not finish something. I could see that happening.
Well, it doesn't have to be a finished product. It just has to be a section. And I mean, it forces me to actually get something done towards the February song.
Right.
That's how I'm looking at it. Is like I'm essentially being forced to write a section of the song I need to have done by February.
By Valentine's Day, right?
Yes.
Which means you have just less than 3 weeks.
Is it that? Oh, shit.
Yeah, just less than 3 weeks, man.
Great. Great.
Ugh. No? You don't think so?
No, I'll get it done. I was just, I haven't been paying attention to the time. Well, now that you mention it, it's just like, oh, great. And now I have to like actually do stuff.
It's only been 2 weeks since we talked about it.
Yeah. And in those 2 weeks, I've been like,
procrastinating.
No, I haven't been procrastinating. I've been getting my DAW up. Because remember the whole formatting, right. And yeah. I've been lazy. Yeah.
But you've been up for about a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this week, this week was just cleaning up space around my desk to get that SV1 nearby.
Right.
Because there was a lot of stuff.
So you could just spin your chair to it and go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's fair.
I was up till like 2 or 3 in the morning last night, just getting that all set up. Well, actually, I was probably done at 1:30 getting the keyboards like situated. And then I spent from like 1:30 till probably 2:30, 3 o'clock playing with it. Because
that's what you do. You set up a toy and you play with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you not record any of it?
No.
Why not?
I wasn't coming up with anything good. All I was doing was just jamming keys in the jamming keys in the key of C and reading the manual to see like what internal stuff there is, like how to transpose the keyboard and stuff like that.
Right.
Wasn't doing anything like interesting.
Okay, that's fair. One of the things I really enjoy about the Roland stage piano that I have is for all of the grand pianos,
mm-hmm.
you can adjust the height of the lid. I don't know what it's actually called, but
I don't know either.
Which changes the resonance of it.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. That's cool.
It is really cool. Yeah.
And I don't have that.
And it's one of those features that I didn't know I had until I read the manual. Had the keyboard 10 years before I read the manual.
That's an RD300?
300 GX, yeah.
They had it then. They must have it still in the 800 then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't imagine they would take it out.
Yeah. And it's just in the... I'd have to sit down with it again, but it's just in the edit section. You scroll through the things that you can edit, and there's lots of them.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them is the lid height or position or something.
Oh, yeah. I have to play with... the only part of my SV1 that I haven't played with is the software.
Mm.
Which allows you to edit...
from the computer.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I get even more options into the computer. Because, like, a lot of the effects and stuff are pretty bare bones on the board itself. But if you plug it into the computer, you can get some more.
Yeah.
So, like, the compression on the board itself, I can either pick if compression's on and how fast it is. Nice. That's it. I don't get to decide the ratio or anything, but in the computer,
you can.
It gives me all the controls that I could possibly want out of a...
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, like, you can design your own amp.
Oh, really?
Well, not design, but, like, you can do things to make the amp sound gross or something like that.
You can mess with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, you can make clicks and pops in the rotary if you want to use the rotary amp.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It gives you like a slew of different styles of amps too.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I can see why you were excited about it.
Well, I wasn't aware of that. I've wanted an SV1 since they were released, which is like several years now.
Yeah.
And yeah, somebody brought theirs in and it's like, it's dirt cheap, $850 for what is... currently a $2,000 brand new keyboard.
That's nuts, man. That is nuts.
And I mean, if I was willing to wait a month, I could have got it for cheaper. But I don't think that it would have stayed at Long McQuaid for a month.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. What's happening in a month?
Well, that's the rules when Long McQuaid employees buy stuff is if we... as a store, buy something, and I wanted to buy it, I have to pay whatever our selling price is within that first month. Or if I wait for a month, I can then get it for what we paid for it, plus 5% or something like that. 5 or 10%. I don't know.
10% is usually standard.
It's significantly cheaper.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
But
that's awesome.
I wasn't going to wait a month because that keyboard would have sold for $850.
No kidding, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even the first person who was supposed to buy that when we first got in.
Who else was interested?
A person named Kirk. He said, it's mine. And then it was like a day or two later, because we had to wait a couple days because the lady dropped it off. It was super frosty. It took us like 8 hours to test it, make sure it worked.
Okay.
And then it took her a couple days to collect the money that we were offering her. Just
to come back and get the money.
Yeah, come back and get the money. Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay.
So in those couple days of waiting, the person that was Kirk dropped out and said, you know what? If I buy this, my girlfriend would probably kill me. So you're allowed to have it, Joey. And me being like, I was like $100 to paying off my current account at the time.
Yeah.
It was just like, ugh, this is stupid.
Damn it.
But I want it. Damn it.
Well, how much do you have left paying off the mics?
$450.
Okay.
So I have paid for half of them.
All right.
Roughly. Not quite, but. I'm only picking away at those.
Right.
Putting like $30 to $50 a month towards them. And then my account, I pay about $50-$60 every paycheck.
That's nothing.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I prefer that my account gets paid every paycheck because it actually makes my paychecks actually... reliable, I guess. I don't know. I can predict what I'm going to get paid.
Yeah.
Is like when I was first working there, I was doing it like every second week, but it didn't ever work out that way.
Right.
So I could get my full paycheck 3 weeks in a row and then I'll get dinged to like $400 and it'll be like the paycheck I need to pay my rent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, me and the assistant manager set it up. So it's like every paycheck money is coming out.
That's, easy enough to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's easy enough to do and it makes it way easier for me to manage my money.
Yeah. Cool.
Because if I have like $2,000 in my bank account, I'm going to buy stuff. It's just how I go.
I know the feeling.
I know you know the feeling.
Oh, yeah.
You're pretty much like, I need to sell stuff so I can buy stuff.
No. I need to sell stuff now to reduce debt. That's what I need to do.
Yeah, but then you'll reduce that debt and then you'll be like, oh, I don't owe money.
No. See, that's the thing is I've gotten myself into such a debt hole that...
You shouldn't?
If I do, they would just be 100% irresponsible.
Okay.
Right. Because if I can pay off my debt, which if I'm not buying stuff, should be able to do relatively easy. Assuming business stays consistent, right?
Right.
And then, so I pay off debt and I should be, it's reasonable to think I could be debt free I owe a private investor a ton of money that I'm not paying anything to yet. Yet. Anyway, I'll get there. So I could have all my credit cards and my bank loans paid off in 3 years, about 3 years.
Okay, that's not terrible.
Be debt-free and then be able to, if I want at that point, save up in advance to make an investment.
Right.
Right. And that's smart business. That's better business.
Right.
Anyway, so I'm at that point now where I'm realizing I'm not making money because I keep such a high debt load.
Okay. Yep. So you're trying to get that down so that you're making money.
Yeah, exactly, right? And the biggest thing that I've noticed is I sat down with a potential partner for the studio here.
Right.
And we sat down to look at the numbers and actually make sense of them, which I've done on my own, but it's so very rare that I sit down with someone else and have that fresh perspective of, wow, someone else is looking at my shit. I better understand this.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Now I'm really embarrassed about how terrible my money management has been, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Anyway, so I sat down to look at this stuff and I realized instantaneously that the only reason I'm not making money, because I talk all the time about how little money I make and that kind of thing. The only reason I'm not making at least an acceptable income, excuse me, is because I have such a humongous debt load.
Okay.
If I cut down that debt load to something that is much more realistic, I'd actually have a reasonable income every month. Wouldn't be fantastic, but it would be, might actually get me above the poverty line for the first time in a decade.
Hmm. Interesting.
Right? Yeah. So that's the thing I'm looking at. And so if I can maintain that relative debt-free existence and make investments through my savings, then I won't ever have to have an episode of, oh, hey, I need to sell something just to pay bills, just to decrease debt, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's the idea anyway.
What was the thing that you wanted to talk about that is from Sunday?
Oh, okay. So We did the show on Sunday, and I had another engineer come in and mix the session because I'm still in recovery from my surgery last week. Wasn't 100% sure if I'd be even not stoned.
You know? Okay.
Because I expect pretty powerful pain meds after a aggressive surgery.
Yeah.
So he comes in and I'm here kind of supervising, making sure he understands everything. I watch him set up some really nice EQ on all the channels, and it was a simple arrangement. It was a guitar, cajon, two vocals, and then five mics for the interview.
Right.
You know, and then a couple of reverbs. I think that might have been it. Some complex routing because we have to send a signal out to the radio, the radio broadcast itself. We have to send a copy of the signal to the computer to be recorded. And the console is set up. I'm still figuring out. We never set up any of the matrixes, right?
Right. Because you didn't think you would need them.
Didn't think I would need them. And now I know I need them. So we might set up at least a few of them. Anyway, so goodness me. So the idea is, we run processing through the mix bus, or yeah, we do the mix through the mix bus out into processing. Cause we need to hit a high level, like a high, SPL level DBL. Wow. You know, you've been away for a week and forget all this shit. Need a high signal level to be broadcast, right?
Okay.
The show can't be quieter than the music that's in front of it or the music that follows it.
Right.
And we don't have the luxury of doing processing live in the computer. Because delays us by whatever, which the more we work through this, less it's less and less important.
Right.
Anyway, so we're trying to do it all, you know, a complete analog mix. So we running through compressors and more EQs and limiters and all that kind of stuff in the analog world, and then out to the broadcast. Anyway, so bus compression saved the show this week, specifically because the insert loop on this console is switchable in or out. Right? We had no idea what the band was going to be when they showed up because they weren't sure the day before, so we couldn't get a specific input list. We didn't know who was singing, who was talking, what was going on. There was a lot of, I don't know. So we get set up, we test all of the mics, we test all of the lines, making sure they're all working, but we have to bypass the insert loop for all of the microphones. And we forgot to reinsert that loop. Once the musicians got here and we get them set up.
Yep.
Anyway, so the engineer made a couple comments to me about how natural such and such compressor sounded, and he really loved how transparent it was, and I'm looking at a couple of the compressors, and they're just smashing away. Like, I don't know. That should be causing more problems than it is. You know, things like that anyway, right?
Yeah.
So as it turned out, we just didn't have any processing on the individual tracks. We had some EQ from the console, but that was it. Everything else was going into the Joe Meek compressor, into the Neve EQ and then into the DBX compressor. And then some soft limiting through the Tone Beast, which I'm loving those Tone Beasts. And so we were hitting, we were hitting 3 or 4 decibels of compression, on the Joe Meek, and then as much as 10 on the DBX, and it just really smoothed everything out.
Yeah.
But we didn't go looking for more problems because it just all sounded good. But the bus compression saved it. Cause I mean, the band was really good, but like most musicians, they're not all that in control of their own dynamics, right?
Fair.
Yeah, it's like most musicians. They're just not as in control.
Well, you have to be like an excruciatingly talented
and well practiced at it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that you have to actually practice. It's like,
exactly. Yeah.
It's difficult.
Just like us learning how to use a compressor. Like, how low, where do I set this threshold? Do I try it here? Do I go lower? Do I go more aggressive? Do I only take a couple decibels off the top?
Do I twist all the knobs to 11?
Anyway, so yeah, so it ended up sounding really nice. And it was just, we didn't even realize until, I don't know, the last quarter of the show, maybe the last 10 minutes of the show,
that you were completely bypassing all the inserts.
And I didn't want to tell the guy, because I knew he would instantly start switching them in. And suddenly everything sounds different.
Yeah. That would have been bad.
Yeah. So we just kind of let it be. But it brought up an interesting thought process. When I do my own mixes, I use a ton of bus compression. Absolute fuck ton of bus compression. I have bus compressors on my drums, and I don't always even compress my drums at all. I might compress a snare that's not dynamically consistent, or a kick drum that's not dynamically consistent, but I often don't compress my toms at all. I certainly don't usually have anything on the overheads. Again, unless something just needs to be controlled, right? But then I do it all through bus compression.
I think I tend to limit the hell out of my toms for the same reason, where it's like inconsistent hits or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I also find that I'm usually dragging when I limit. I'm limiting so hard that I'm actually dragging like some of the overtones up.
Yeah.
And then I EQ what I don't want in those toms generally.
Generally out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to do that too, but then I found I would lose a lot of the dynamics of the drummer's performance. You know, he would start a slow build and I would have to automate.
You know what? I haven't encountered very much of that. So, and typically if I have that, usually the drummer is so good that I don't have to smash the toms.
Well, and that's the thing, is I've been lucky the last 6 months, maybe that's all my memory is, but I've been
like
lucky
a goldfish.
Yeah, right. I've been lucky the last 6 months or so to only work with good drummers, and I haven't had to salvage a performance.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, and even the one project that I worked with that didn't have a good drummer, I programmed all the drums.
Oh, you had a good drummer.
So I wrote in
with the bad hits.
Yeah. Yeah, but and so for all those cases, I didn't have to. In the case of the neighbors being loud.
Yeah.
In the case of the Soapbox Duo, I think all I had was a bus compressor on that guy, because he was so dynamically consistent, but had nice push and pull with his dynamics, that it was just a matter of proverbial glue it all together, right?
Yeah,
you know. And then of course, I'll always have another instrument bus that's not drums.
Right.
Right. And then I bus those both down to a band bus that's kind of like the entire band minus the vocals. And I have bus compressors on all three of those. In fact, the band bus, I usually have a multiband on there just to kind of give the whole song some push and pull that feels a little more natural than.
Okay.
Yeah, and I find myself doing so much less individual track compression because of it. I do a lot more individual track EQ, but a lot less track compression.
I'm trying to think if I do a whole lot of track compression. I don't. Yeah, I think I do, but I don't. Like, it depends on what it is, where I'll put individual compressors and stuff like that on.
Does it depend on the performance or the instrument?
A little both, I think, for me. If the performance is decent, then typically I will bus a bunch of the same instruments together and do all the compression on the bus. Hmm. Especially if it's similar parts. So if like there's four rhythm guitars in a section, like I'm not going to put
four individual compressors
with the same setting. Like that doesn't make sense. Just bus it to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then compress the bus. Because it doesn't make sense to use up that much DSP.
Yeah. Yeah. That too. Right. Yeah.
And I mean, that probably comes from, when I started, I didn't even have 4 gigs of RAM or whatever it was.
Okay.
32-bit, right?
32-bit, still lots of headroom.
I don't remember. But I remember having a really garbage computer when I first started getting into recording.
Right.
And I would record a guitar and would have to freeze it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that comes from then. And being like, well, I got these 6 guitar parts, and if I put 6 compressors, I'm not going to be able to do very much more before I have to freeze. So let's route all these guitar parts to a track and use 1 compressor, and then I'm using significantly less power.
Right.
Whereas nowadays, I have a computer that could easily do like 200 compressors and
and not bring
not sweat. That I would ever want to do that, because that sounds like a fucking nightmare.
It sounds like so much work.
Yeah,
that's just unnecessary.
Yeah, when I could just take a couple tracks, send them to a bus, use a compressor to just compress all those parts together, done.
And then you hide those individual tracks and you just have that bus fader.
Yeah,
and it's one less thing.
Yeah,
that brings me to the I've been setting up this online shop for online mixing and mastering and editing and all that kind of stuff, right? And I've been working out the system of how do I manage it when someone sends me more than 32 tracks but wants an analog mix, because I only have the 32 channel converter, right?
Converter, yeah.
How do I manage that?
You have to do the Chris Lord Alge thing. Hire your interns to
submix what you need submixed.
Yeah, and then send it to your 32 channels.
And that's exactly what I decided I was going to do. Was I was just going to everything that needed to be submixed would just get submixed, and I would warn the client in advance.
You know, that don't have a 96-channel console.
Exactly, and I'm even building that into that section of the webpage. Yeah, you know, if you have more than 32 tracks and you want an analog mix, you're either going to have to accept that we'll submix things digitally before it gets to the analog world,
or that you have to do it yourself.
Yeah, which either is totally fine, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I'd rather have my own control over it, right? Because if they blend the toms together and into a stereo track and they're not blended together well, right?
Yeah, that could be. Although they're wanting to go all analog, they probably get an actual engineer to do that for them.
Very true. Very true.
I think that's that problem you're talking about. Probably I think would be very safe. Rare.
Yeah, I mean, I don't imagine a lot of people want to pay the extra money for the analog mix anyway, right? Because it is more time-consuming.
Yeah.
Especially if you want something like Recall.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, here's a large bill for the analog mix. Now here's an equally large bill just for the Recall notes, just in case you want me to do a...
Can't wait till the hybrid boards, mostly like the controller, hybrid controllers. / interfaces. I want those to be more affordable.
How do you mean?
I would love to have a controller that I can use as an interface. So have like 16 inputs or 32 inputs would be amazing. But
like that. Now I assume you're talking about the more expensive stuff, like not the Personas stuff, right?
No, I don't like the Persona stuff.
Yeah, so you're
especially
talking...
their new 8-channel controller. That thing's ugly.
Yes, it is.
A lot of people tell me that, no, it's pretty slick, and I just look at it. Just, that looks like garbage.
Yes. I assume you're talking about like Yamaha's console that's entirely modular.
Well, essentially what I would like is like my MCU,
right?
But with microphone inputs and insert points.
That sounds like the Pro Tools C24.
Yeah, but I don't want to pay that kind of money for that.
10 grand for that.
Yeah. If they could get like a 24-channel DAW controller / several microphone inputs with insert points. That, like, if they could get insert points into there for like, I don't know.
Do you want me to tell you what console actually does that? It's out
there. Oh, I know it exists. It's incredibly expensive, probably.
$2,500.
What?
Yeah.
I paid $2,500 for that.
Yeah. So, do you remember my old digital console that I had before the Mackies?
The Tascam.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. You can get a 16-channel version. They can do up to 48 channels of control on the computer, on the DAW, or you can get a 24 input version that can do up to 72 faders of control on the DAW.
Huh. Interesting. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Motorized faders.
Motorized faders, I really like the preamps. The preamps are neutral warm.
Okay.
They're nothing spectacular, right?
But, no.
But they're completely functional.
Yeah. I mean, for $2,500, I would pay for a DAW controller with 24 inputs. / interface that can do 24 inputs.
Yeah.
And I would love to have insert points.
And it has insert points. Mic preamp, insert points, converter.
Huh.
Plus, if you... it has some pretty advanced routing internally. You can route your digital I/O to be digital insert points.
Well, that almost sounds like the... the newer Soundcraft Signature series.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I love that board because it's like you can there's
really
a USB cable going directly to your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that USB cable acts as like an insert snake, I guess you could almost call it.
Cool. Okay.
Because it will send each individual track to your computer, yeah, in which you can then map it to several different channels,
yeah,
put on effects, and send back to the board. And then from the board out to your speakers. So for like a live setting, if you wanted a hybrid,
yeah,
like that is awesome.
There you go.
But
and that's even cheaper. Like that multi-track one, the one that actually does the multi-track IO,
mm-hmm,
that one's only like 900 American.
Hmm. I don't know. I'd pay up to $5,000 if it had EQs that can change pre or post or bypass.
The Tascam had TC Electronics powered
EQs?
Digital EQs, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. That'd be worth it. TC Electronics is good.
Yeah. Yeah, all the software in the Tascam, all the effects and compressors and EQs and gates were all powered by TC Electronics.
Okay. I wouldn't have even thought to look into Tascam mixers.
Well, and the trouble with them is that line of console hasn't been updated since 2006.
Well, then they should update it.
That's one of the reasons it's so cheap, though.
Well, they should update it.
They should. Yeah. I don't know how much they're selling, though, right? Because the market has become so saturated with that kind of console. You know, like
well, what I would ultimately like is a hybrid console that I can use my computer to do recall.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, that would be ideal. But
it doesn't cost you $45,000.
Yeah. Yeah. With motorized faders, because I love motorized faders.
Yeah.
Well, I just love being able to load up my project and have all my faders in place. It's just,
mm-hmm,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Which is what you have the Mackie for.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Mackie, I wish somebody would make something like the Mackie, but better. Because currently in like the controller market, like the Mackie is the one, but
I think the Artist Mix, Avid's Artist Mix, is better.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't liked any Avid's, like the appearance of any Avid's controllers.
That's fair. I was
and the fact that they make them like almost proprietary to Pro Tools also.
Well, no, as long as your DAW can run Huey, then you have full control over the Artist Mix. And every DAW can, right?
Yeah.
I ended up at the end, because I was tired of switching. I was tired of switching the protocols with the Mackie boards every time I'd switch between Pro Tools and Cubase and Logic and whatever. I just set them up as Huey controllers, and was done with it. And then I never had to change.
Hmm.
Well, that still gave me the scribble strips. It still gave me the, still gave me, of course, the pan and fader control.
Right.
It just didn't give me the in-depth, super complicated, that always pissed me off, control over everything else that it was capable of.
Okay. Well.
And that's one of the reasons why I loved the Yamaha's Nuage. Because it was designed, now it's like retardedly expensive, but it was designed to interface with Nuendo, which means it also interfaced with Cubase,
mm-hmm,
at a button per function level.
That's always nice.
Yeah.
And I don't like these controllers that are out where it's like press function one plus move this fader to do this task.
Yeah. A button per function. And you could get a individual screen per channel. I mean, everything came in 8-channel chunks, right?
But yeah.
But the whole thing was modular. You had an EQ section, you had your send auxiliary section, one button per function. It was awesome. Now, for me to map out what I would use here, that ended up costing like $50,000 or $60,000. A lot of money. Yeah.
You know, it's another thing that I would like in a dock controller.
What's that?
The display menus that tell you what tracks what.
Yeah.
I want that to not be at the top, but be scribble strips at the bottom.
Isn't that what Avid's done?
No, it's not the top.
What the hell, man? They used to have them at the bottom.
Yeah.
Damn it.
I'd like them to be at the bottom.
Yeah, they should be at the bottom. That was one of the whole things I loved about the Avid thing.
Well, yeah, the current artist mix. I don't think that looks all that great.
I like that. I got to be honest. I like that look better than the Mackies. But then I like the black better than the silver.
Fair enough, but I don't know.
Plus, I think I'm pretty sure with a little bit of modification, I could fit that unit right into this section.
The section that you never use?
The section that I never use, yet.
Well, fair enough. I'm not even too concerned about the color of the artist mix. It's more the lack of slopes that I'm concerned about, because I like to have that slope that most consoles have.
These were designed to be built into a desk.
Yeah.
Right? I see the one Stu over at Sound Extractor has one of those, or maybe he's got a couple of them. Built into his desk.
Okay. And I mean, if you're doing that, then you're placing the slope that you want out of it.
Yeah. Although I've come to appreciate the faders on the flat.
Yeah. I don't. Not the faders that I want on a slope. It's all the other everything knobs else that I want on the slope.
Yeah, that's fair.
Especially like the display screen, if it is going to be up top, like I want it. So that it's just a glance, like very little eye movement to see this knob or this fader to that track, and that's the one that I'm editing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I want a lot for very little money is essentially what I'm coming down to.
Yeah, and you know, that's probably one thing you'd hate about the Tascams then, is they don't have scribble strips at all.
Okay, yeah, no. Already off.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I feel like we're 5 years away from what you want.
Oh, I'm sure that what I want is coming, and it's like in the woodwork.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause I mean, it's a pretty simple digital system, right? It's just a matter of a company taking the gamble that there'll be enough market out there for it.
Yeah.
Right. And we're at a stage right now where so many studios they've kind of made that investment into digital, and these kind of things, like the kind of thing you're talking about, is just a little higher than your average home user, which is where most of the money is being spent. And it's a little lower than the average studio would be.
Yeah, it's in the middle there.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever see the Allen & Heath their GSR? Did you ever see that console?
Probably.
It was a 24 channel console. It was a 24 channel console that had interface built in, fader control built in.
I know they're Q control.
And a switch per fader to determine whether you were controlling the audio output or the dock control.
It was
a persuader fit switch.
I don't normally look at the Allen & Heath stuff, because I know when they come up with stuff like that, it's usually for live, and thus it doesn't have all the things I need.
And this one was designed for the studio.
Okay. And that,
I was looking into it, and it was way more money than you wanted to spend. At the time, the dollar was about uneven. Yeah, this would have been like the summer of 2013, right before I settled on the Mackies. Yeah, it was right before I settled on the Mackies. I was looking at this Allen & Heath console, and it was 24 faders, plus two additional tube preamps.
Right.
And it was an analog console, full analog console that allowed you to insert and output to and from digital at like various points through the channel strip.
Yeah.
Plus it allowed you to, it had a button on every strip above every fader. It actually had four buttons for four different modes. And one of them was DAW control. And it was a super, super great compact unit that would have cost, I think it was $14,000 all in.
Yeah, that's still more than I would like to spend.
Right, right. But again, now that was 3 years ago now.
Yeah, well.
3 years ago at least.
I know what I want, and for the price point that I want it at, it's not happening anytime soon. Because
exactly.
The companies that are venturing into that realm of doing things are, it's not cheap. And I know it's not cheap.
And some companies that are getting into the digital console realm and doing it well, and doing it in your price point, are staying away from DAW compatibility. Like they're drawing the line at you know, like Soundcraft. Soundcraft is just entering with some.
They have some really cool ideas that are like just at the verge of what I want.
Right, but they're digital consoles. Like the consoles that I think are everything you want minus the DAW capabilities, they've made a point of staying away from DAW interface.
Yeah.
Two-channel output, well, USB, and that's
Soundcraft's focusing on the live sound, it looks like, right. Too.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been noticing with digital boards is a lot of them are doing the whole, let's design this for live sound, not studio sound. And I mean, the market for live sound's bigger.
Well, and the market for a digital console in a studio is pretty, there's not a lot of people that seem to be excited about that, right?
Yeah.
Especially
everybody's all like, we want our SSL G9000 or our Neve whatever's API. Well, API does it. API is one of the companies that's like, our current model can have dock controllability.
Well, everybody's going to that, right?
Yeah.
Like every...
I don't like APIs faders now. They're ugly.
every console company, at least studio, is building in DAW control into their systems.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to a digital console.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. The API... large format consoles have everything that I'd want in a console, just nowhere near the price point that I can even imagine
so
getting into.
The only reason, and the only reason you want to stay away from the Personas, because the Personas, they're the first ones that are in your price range that have scribble strips, that have fader, like
yeah, but I don't like those boards and like the workflow of those boards. Those boards are...
Yeah, they're ugly as shit.
Well, they're difficult to use, too.
They make the Tascam look really easy. Or, sorry, the Tascam makes them look really easy. Because the Tascam was a nightmare.
Oh, we're approaching the end.
I guess that's the end of today.
We actually talked about audio, like, pretty much the entire way through.
We did, right? And we might actually time this out, right? And wish everybody a happy birthday till next time.
Yeah.
Follow our hosts on Twitter at Two Bodies of Water.
You got that mic in a comfortable spot yet?
I'm still working on it.
At Joey R. Engineer.
I can't even talk.
I don't remember what my point was.
This is a boring podcast.
I realize at the end of this,
We didn't introduce ourselves.
On to the internet you go. Go switch off.